You're listening to a special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. We continue our candidate conversations with more from the race for U.S. Senate, where we now hear from the Independent Party of Delaware's candidate, Dr. Michael Katz. Katz previously served one term in the Delaware State Senate as a Democrat, winning the North Wilmington 4th District seat in 2008, then losing it to Republican Greg Lavelle in 2012. A reminder, the candidate conversations you hear on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. Tell us a little bit about your background and qualifications for the job, perhaps something that voters may not be able to glean from like your campaign website or you know, just kind of looking up Dr. Mike Katz.
Sure. Well, just going back quite a few years, I grew up in a small town in Connecticut in a working class family. My dad was a small business person, was not college educated. My mom was the editor of a small town newspaper. I am a pediatric critical care anesthesiologist, a business owner, also a former Delaware State Senator. My wife and I came to Delaware. I was at Boston Children's Hospital and recruited to AI DuPont Hospital for Children. And we feel so fortunate that we found our way to Delaware and were able to have and raise our family here. We have three grown kids who are all born in Delaware. And my wife and I have been married for 37 years.
So let's talk about some issues, and we'll start with immigration. You know, there was a bipartisan border reform bill ready to go before many Republicans backed away at the behest of former President Trump. Curious if that is a bill that you would support if elected.
Well, first of all, the way I approach legislation, most legislation and legislators at the state level and at the federal level are, I call, downstreamers. They're basically very reactionary and dealing with symptoms of problems, and immigration is a major issue for us. So instead of dealing with the symptoms, putting a Band-Aid on a problem, I like to look at sort of the upstream causative root problems that we're dealing with. Immigration is an extremely important issue for our country. It's the foundation of our country. Most of us in this country are here because of immigration, and we need to make sure that immigration is legal, safe, and secure. It's a national security issue to make sure that we abide by the laws of our country and that people come through our borders. We do it safely, legally. We're making sure that we are addressing the specific needs of our country. And also, we want to make sure that we are careful of issues. And as a physician, I'm concerned about, you know, what diseases are coming across the border, making sure that we're not reintroducing diseases that we've eradicated in our country, and also public safety issues, making sure that our communities are safe. So without, you know, diving into specifics of a current piece of legislation, I like to go upstream and look at the problem, what our goals, objectives are about legal, safe, and secure immigration, and make sure that we fine-tune and optimize the laws of our country to make sure that we have safe communities and we have a law-abiding society.
Following the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the issue of abortion has been left to the states, creating kind of a patchwork of approaches throughout the country and leaving questions about other related reproductive issues like IVF. Do you believe Congress should step in some way? And if so, how?
Well, I believe in separation of power. We have three branches of government. We have the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. My concern, first of all, is that the politicization of those branches of government and the sort of the bleeding together of the roles of those government roles of government. So I believe that we need to make sure that we are not overstepping the bounds and, as legislators, unduly influencing the courts. The courts have their role, they have their expertise, and we need to make sure that we have separation of the powers. With respect to abortion specifically, Supreme Court has stated that and determined that the determination of abortion and the ability to have an abortion is under the rule of the states. Delaware does have legal abortion. As a physician, I believe that every, and I know that every patient, and we are all patients, every patient has specific health needs that are specifically unique, and ultimately every health decision should be made between the patient and their physician.
Building on the idea of the Supreme Court and its decision-making process, in the wake of that Roe decision and some others recently by the court, President Biden has suggested some efforts to reform the court, specifically ethics rules, perhaps term limits. Would you support any of those type of measures to change the way the Supreme Court currently operates?
Well, this is an example of how I'm very concerned that the Supreme Court has been politicized. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make sure that it never hurts to take a look at our Constitution, how it's structured. It's, well, you know, it's almost 250 years old. It's a beautiful document. It always amazes me the more I study it, how brilliant the people and our founders were to create that document and how they were able to do it so long ago. And, you know, I think about it, probably one of the reasons why they were able to do it is because they sat down for quite a bit, you know, weeks and weeks together and discussed. And that's kind of where we've gotten away from in our current political environment. So I always think it's always good to look at how we can improve things. We need to be careful and we need to be thoughtful and work together. You know, it's all Americans, as I said, in the code of conduct to solve problems and to improve our society for all. So I'm always open for talking, looking, but I'm very concerned about the politicization of these issues.
Voters consistently list the economy as a top issue. The Biden administration touts low unemployment, strong job numbers for the most part recently, along with other positive economic indicators, as signs the country is headed in the right direction. But inflation, higher prices for many everyday goods leave many people still struggling at this point economically. What would you support Congress doing to promote economic growth and improving the economy?
Well, this is part in the beginning of our discussion. You asked some of the sort of advantages that I would bring in the U.S. Senate mm-hmm. that differentiate me from other candidates. I not only have a medical degree and well versed in the business of healthcare, which is a significant part of our economy, approximately 17%+ of our GDP, but I also have an international executive MBA, which I got at Georgetown, where I did my medical degree as well, and I also have an undergraduate degree in economics. So I'm well versed in not only the economy of the United States, but also international business. Business and the sort of getting to the three pillars that I focus on legislatively, it's the economy, jobs, cost of living is one, healthcare is two, and then education. They're all integrated. So when it comes to the economy, it's complex. It's not just a one and done or a couple different bills we need to do. We need to invest in education, workforce development. We need to introduce tax reform that spurs economic growth, decreases corporate tax burdens, and also incentivizes business development. We also need to modify our tax code that makes it simpler, fairer, and more competitive. Other things we need to do to make us more competitive and a stronger, more robust economy is energy independence. It's also a national security issue, but energy independence, affordable energy is a huge input and cost of doing business. Also, we need to improve government operations and efficiencies, making sure that we're making it easy for businesses to do business, that they're not overregulated, and also making sure that we're fiscally responsible as a government, that we have balanced budgets, and that we quickly start to address our national debt, which I think is one of the biggest issues that we face going forward to keep a strong America.
I do want to move into foreign policy for a little bit. So certainly one of the big issues is the situation in the Middle East with Israel and Gaza. President Biden has been seeking a ceasefire in Gaza to no avail to this point. What should the U.S. approach be in this conflict?
Yeah, well, this is a complex issue. It's been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. The first decision and the way I make decisions, especially as a United States senator, is to do what's in the best interest of the United States. We need to make sure that we have not only homeland security, but a strong national defense We have a set of values, which is basically founded on our Constitution of liberty, justice, equality for all. So we need to make sure that we abide by our foundational principles and protect those foundational principles. And we also support societies and allies around the world that value those principles. And it comes down to recognizing, our common humanity and being respectful of each other, not only people that live in our country, but also people around the world. So we need to find ways to work together and solve problems so that we can live in peace together.
Is there a specific role for the U.S. in that Israeli-Gaza conflict beyond, or is it just trying to help broker that kind of ceasefire to begin a process of getting things on a better track than they are right now?
No, I believe that, the United States is that, shining light on top of a hill. We have a unique set of values in the world. We are a very diverse, integrated society, and we are a good example for everybody else around the world how we can live together in peace and harmony. And so I do believe that the United States does have a leadership role, but we can't do it alone. We need to bring people around the world together, and also the people that are in conflict with each other, and we need to bring them to the table and help them work out their problems. Ultimately, they're the ones that need to live together and their neighbors, and we're living in the same neighborhood.
The other major foreign policy issue on the table is the war in Ukraine. That continues. Where do you stand on continuing support to Ukraine as it seeks to fend off the Russian invasion that is now 2.5 years old?
Yeah, so this gets to whenever you get into a conflict or a problem that you need to solve, you need to know what your objective is. And objectives can change as you learn more about the issue. Mm-hmm. But with respect to Ukraine, most of the information I have is the information that I get through the media, mm-hmm. and depending on what media channel you listen to, and I try to listen to many because they're conflicting. That's where I gather my information. Having said that, and knowing even just serving in the state senate at a state level, when you're in a legislative role, you have access to live information and much better information, and you have the ability to find out what the truth is. With respect to what our role is in Ukraine, it gets back to the earlier question, what is our role internationally? And we need to show leadership. We need to, we can't do it alone. We need to work, especially with our European allies. And it's about recognizing our common humanity, saving lives, and helping people live in peace and harmony together. So specifically, we need to bring people together and find out the facts, what's going on, but have a goal and objective of what we want to accomplish.
I want to ask a very Senate-specific question because this has been something that's come up over recent years. Should the Senate consider doing away with the filibuster? And if so, why? If not, why not?
Well, that's a question that goes to, how our government was structured, mm-hmm. and there was a role for that. The concern I have, and it gets to the court issue, the issue of whether or not we should modify the court or pack the court, some people say. We need to make sure I don't have a problem evaluating it, figuring out, is it still relevant in today's legislative bodies? We want to make sure there was a role for it in the past to make sure that the voices of the minority are, mm-hmm. are not steamrolled. So I do have concerns about, doing away with it, but I'm always willing to take a look at it. And if I find information that it would make our government work better, then yes. If it's just to continue to increase the power and control of one party, then I would not vote for it. And we've seen some of the problems. I mean, we go back to 2013 with Harry Reid, where he pulled the nuclear option to get some of the appointments in the courts for President Obama. And then, a few years later, we saw what happened when the power in the legislative bodies changed, that now people are concerned that, President Trump was able to appoint three Supreme Court judges. And so it's a back and forth. And this is a perfect example of how the two parties are literally ripping our country apart because their core objective is to maintain power and control.
Building on that, this is a time that there seems to be stronger distrust of government and calls for more transparency and accountability. If elected, what role do you feel you could personally play and play in the role as a U.S. senator in delivering greater transparency and accountability and building back some of that trust in government?
Well, I was very active in the state, in Delaware, in the state Senate with transparency legislation that I introduced, as well as lobby reform and working to eliminate the influence of money and special interests in our government. My plan is that within the first 90 days, these are some of the issues I would be addressing. The first thing that I would be introducing is term limits, because I believe that serving in Congress is a duty. It's a form of service, and that many people get elected to Congress and they make a career out of it and build enormous wealth. So term limits would be number one. The second thing I would do to kind of address the efficiency of our government is to do a complete review of government operations, how to restructure our federal government so that it's transparent, it's efficient, lower cost, that we know what our goals and objectives are, the services that we want to provide as a federal government, and making sure that we're able to deliver those services efficiently at lower cost.
What role do you feel rhetoric plays in this issue of distrust in government? I mean, we've heard a lot of talk about, and I think you're even kind of touching on a little bit too, about how this politicization is harming our democracy. How much does rhetoric play that role, and is that rhetoric putting democracy at risk because of the way it's polarizing our politics and by virtue of that, the society at large?
Yeah, well, it gets back to America's political system. It's broken. It's grounded on tribal politics, money, and the core value of winning to keep power. And the two major political parties, I really believe, are the root cause of America's divisiveness and dysfunction, not only in the government, but in our society, in our communities. It's this ongoing drumbeat of you know, you're either with us or you're against us. And it's this overall pall of hate, and just the two parties, you know, as I said, want us to hate us so that they can divide us and keep their power. And Americans are just exhausted by it. And that's really the prime reason why I'm running as an independent, because my sole purpose and sole allegiance is to serve in the best interests of all Delawareans and Americans, and abiding by that code of conduct founded on the foundational principles of our Constitution, liberty, justice, and equality for all, and then that behavioral code of conduct, which our current Congress, even at the state level, doesn't have. You know, we need to have a code of conduct, a behavioral code of conduct, in which we are respectful of each other, we recognize our common humanity, we work for and seek unity, and we work together with all Americans to solve problems to improve our society. So I really believe the two parties are the root cause of our dysfunction and divisiveness in our society.
I want to wrap up by asking if there's an issue we haven't discussed that you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how you could address it if elected.
Yeah, well, the three pillars of legislation that I mentioned are our economy, jobs, cost of living, health care, and education. I've well experienced and have an extensive experience in all of three of these areas, and these areas are all interconnected. So when we need to start looking upstream, especially with education, making sure that we are having healthy babies, healthy pregnancies, making sure that we're providing early childhood education beginning in the first weeks, and that this education is available regardless of the zip code, because a good education, a healthy child, means that ultimately they'll be able to pursue the dreams that they have, their passions, be able to have a job and have economic prosperity. You know, some of the other issues dealing with veterans affairs, making sure that we're addressing the needs of our veterans who've served our country, and also first responders who are overworked, understaffed, and underpaid. They step up to work every single day and put their lives at risk. So we need to address those issues as well.
That's Independent Party of Delaware candidate for U.S. Senate, Dr. Michael Katz. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. We'll hear from the Democrat in this race, Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester, on The Green this Friday. And up next on this edition of The Green, we continue our series of races to watch with a look at the race for mayor of Wilmington. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.